Hello, Shalom. My name is Nachum Amzel, and this podcast is What Does Judaism Say About? This is the full podcast. Today's topic is the Jewish view of getting and being old and dementia. Modern medical discoveries allow more people than ever before to reach old age in good health, as new techniques and discoveries attack, arrest, and often eliminate diseases. This new phenomenon is ostensibly a positive development, yet the increasing numbers of seniors, especially after retirement age, seem to also cause new problems for society. How should all these people react to and adjust to old age? How should others treat these elders who are now reaching higher ages in greater numbers and greater health than ever before? Judaism has much to say about these questions. And then there are those seniors who are in good physical health, but whose mental capacities are diminished. What does Judaism say about these people? And how can each Jew, both as an individual and as part of the community, relate to them? Although there are many different sources relating to old age, the general Jewish attitude about reaching this time of life seems quite ambivalent. Some of the sources seem to say it is a time to dread. Jews ask in prayer, for example, not to be thrown into old age, Al tashlicheni li'et zikna, and not for God to leave us when we get there. The Talmud explains the verse in Ecclesiastes that speaks about the days of evil as referring to the time of old age. In another passage, Rava complained that he was never treated properly for the age that he truly was. When he was a youngster, they treated him as an adult, i.e., they expected him to act more mature than his years. And when he became older, they treated him like a child. This passage describes many children who today have to take care of their elderly parents and often have to mother these elderly people who at one time were parents in the role of authority. Rav Dimi looks at the crown of youth as something positive, but the crown of old age is a heavy burden, too heavy to bear, he says. The Talmud further describes all the negative aspects of aging. In old age, the mind begins to deteriorate. A person's lips do not function as well, and a person's hearing begins to fade. The Mishnah explains about the difficulty of teaching an old person. It's like teaching an old dog new tricks, but in the words of the Mishnah, like writing on a piece of paper that has been erased many times before. All of these statements point to a fear of old age, a breakdown of the person in old age, and a very negative view of the later years of life. On the other hand, there are many positive statements about becoming elderly. The Mishnah says that learning for an old person is like eating very ripe grapes and drinking aged wine, as compared to learning from a young person where the grapes and wine do not taste quite as good. Therefore, learning from the elderly is preferred over learning from a younger person. The Talmud says that the older a scholar gets, the greater his scholarship and greater his wisdom, not less. Then the Talmud describes the amazing story of Rabbi Chanina. When he was 80 years old, he was still so spry that he would stand on one foot, change his shoe, and then tie his shoe on the other foot, all while standing on one foot. There are very few younger people today who could accomplish this feat with their feet. This shows us that age is only a number, and there are no fixed rules about whom or what is considered old. Being old was deemed to be so important for certain tasks that, according to Rabbi Yochanan, a person could not become a member of the Sanhedrin, the highest Jewish law court, unless he had reached old age in physical years. This could not refer to a figurative old age, signifying wisdom, since wisdom was another characteristic that was required for being in the Sanhedrin. In the daily silent prayer at the height of the prayer service, Jews recite three times a day a prayer lauding the righteous. In it, Jews ask God for mercy for the righteous, the pious, and the elderly of the people. The Midrash states that it was in the merit of the elderly that the Jewish people continued to exist at all. According to Rabbi Shimon, one of the qualities of a righteous person is that that person will try and strive to achieve old age. Another midrash seems to prove that being old is a positive, not a negative development in Judaism. Until the time of Abraham in the Torah, there was no old age in the world at all. Although people got older, some people died way after 100 years old. But their faces and their bodies did not age, and they did not look older. Therefore, the Midrash says, since Isaac looked exactly like his father Abraham, when they both came into a room, people could not tell them apart, and no one was able to give any special respect to Abraham because of his age. It was then that Abraham prayed to God that old age come into the world, so that he would age and people could tell the difference between the elderly and the younger people, in order to give the elderly the respect they deserved. God thought it was a good idea and immediately gave Abraham old age. As it says in the Torah, for the very first time, Abraham became old. So which approach then is the authentic Jewish approach? Is it a positive or negative to become old in the Jewish view? Evidently, it depends on the individual person. Each person handles the advancement of age differently. Old age in Judaism is clearly a state of mind. The Midrash says that some people have years and other people have old age. Apparently, the Midrash wants to tell us that you can have advanced years without old age and you can achieve old age even without advanced years. There are certain people who can feel young even though they have reached advanced years. This was shown in the story of Rabbi Chanina, who behaved as a youngster while at age 80. On the other hand, there are certain individuals who feel old, even though they are very young in terms of their age. The Talmud analyzes the verse, indicating that the great prophet Samuel was old. But then the Talmud asks, how could he be old when we know that he died at the age of 52? And it answers that Samuel aged greatly, despite his relatively young years. Samuel felt badly about the fact that he had made Saul the king, and then he witnessed Saul's moral character deteriorate and his rule collapse. Apparently, this anguish caused Samuel to age greatly, and he felt old. It seems clear, then, that if you can feel and act young like Rabbi Chanina, then aging need not be a difficult problem. If you feel old and act like Samuel, then indeed, the aging process will take its toll on the person, and it's a time to be dreaded. It is true that Judaism generally defines old age in objective terms, using 70 years as a benchmark. And these 70 years, we have to remember, was at a time where half the people, at least, never reached the age of 40. Nevertheless, the idea of an old age, as seen by Samuel, is truly a subjective one in Judaism, unrelated to physical years. The same concept can be demonstrated from another Talmudic statement that describes a woman's age, a touchy subject not only today, but even in the time of the Talmud. It asks, how can we know when a woman is old? The answer is that she is old only when her friends call her old. Again, we see that the definition of old age in calling a person old is a very subjective one, based on how the individual feels and acts. If a woman feels and acts young, her friends would never call her old. Only when she presents herself as old will her friends think of her as old. Truly then, in Judaism, old age is a state of mind. Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik, one of the great Talmudic rabbis and teachers of the 20th century, in describing the war with Amalek and the Jewish people prior to the giving of the Torah, says that this war was necessary before the Jewish people could receive the Torah. Only after a near defeat did the people realize that they were so vulnerable and truly needed God and the Torah to overcome life's difficulties. This is alluded to in the verse that connects the battle of Amalek at Rephidim with the coming to Mount Sinai, according to Rashi. Rabbi Soloveitchik expanded on this concept and said that each person has his or her own Rephidim, his or her own challenge in life that seems to defeat him or her. He used the specific example of old age, showing that some people let it defeat them and beat them down, while others, understanding that they can no longer do some of the things that they had done previously, are able to cope and make the most out of their new situation. Understanding Torah and its values can help the Jew cope with old age. This analysis may answer an apparent contradiction between two of the passages cited earlier. One claims that the mind deteriorates in old age, and the other asserts that scholars grow in learning even during old age. In addition to understanding this concept on a physical level, some people deteriorate and some do not, we may be able to say that the Torah scholar who learns to properly cope with decreasing physical abilities, understanding the Refidim concept in Torah, will still be able to continue to grow as a human being. On the other hand, a person who was in control of his environment during his or her life, who felt invincible, who now has to slow down in old age, may not be able to handle this new situation because he or she does not properly understand the Torah approach. In a similar manner, the interpretation of the Midrash, the verse says that he who has been educated in Torah and Torah values as a youngster, Shtulim Beveit Hashem, will indeed remain vibrant and young in old age. As people get old, they often have difficulty coping with the reality of death and the cycle of life. It is the nature of the world that as the older become older, the young must take over. Judaism recognizes this as well. Abraham possessed a special coin, says the Midrash. On one side was a picture of an old man and an old woman, but on the other side was a picture of a boy and a young girl. Abraham understood that both are necessary for the Jewish community to thrive. In the famous story of the binding of Isaac, the Torah specifically goes out of its way to say twice that Abraham and Isaac went together, v'yalchu shneihem yachdav, both generations united. So too, Moses understood the importance of uniting the elderly with the young. And when Pharaoh asked him to send the people out for a few days, he insisted, Moshe, that the young and the elderly must leave together, but Pharaoh denied this. While both are important to the Jewish community, the elderly must understand that gradually the next generation will grow into positions of authority and must replace those of the previous generation. Contrary to the initial reaction of most people, the march of time seems to be something good, not something negative. The Talmud states there was a special city called Luz, in which no one ever died. The Talmud recounts that after a while, some people got tired of life, and they then left the city of Luz and died. Apparently, the idea of going on endlessly bored these people, and they chose to die. If time stood still for us, as intriguing as the idea initially seems, people's lives would be worse off, not better. Time, the life cycle, and death itself are all part of life as we know it. Once the elderly come to grips with their mortality, the rest of life can be much more satisfying. Rabbi Yosef in the Talmud viewed old age and death in the proper perspective. When he reached the age of 60, he threw a party because he had avoided the early death and punishment called karet and realized all his days henceforth were gravy. They were all a benefit. If every person viewed each day after the age of 60, as Rav Yossi did, as an undeserved gift from God, then the attitudes of most old people might be quite different and would certainly be much more positive and optimistic. But how should others treat old people exactly? When the average adult or even a youngster is asked how an old person should be treated, the usual answer is, with respect. When that same person is asked why this should be so, they usually do not have a proper response. Judaism has very specific answers. The reason a Jew must respect an old person is simply because the Torah says so, as a commandment. That's the bottom line. But the Talmud goes on and explains another reason for this by stating that the Hebrew word zaken, an old person, is actually an acronym for the words he who has acquired wisdom. Ze shekana chachma. Apparently, according to the Talmud, every old person, even with a limited education, has acquired wisdom simply by living and experiencing life. Book knowledge is not required for a person to acquire wisdom. Although many people have knowledge, they do not often possess wisdom, i.e., how to apply that knowledge to life's situations. This is a type of wisdom every old person necessarily achieves because of his or her experience. Thus, the Torah requires that an old person receive the respect of all. And in Jewish law, it makes no difference whether the person is a Jew or not a Jew. Old people have acquired wisdom. The idea that the elderly automatically have some degree of wisdom can be seen in the name given to the political leaders in early American history and sometimes even today. They were called village elders or aldermen from the original elderman, and this term is still used today in many, many towns, because they were given this title as leaders. There was no requirement that they be old. However, there is an implied equation between wisdom and the term elderly. Can a person acquire wisdom even if he's young? Judaism says yes. The Talmud speaks of the elders of Beit Shammai and the elders of Beit Hillel visiting a sick Rabbi Yochanan. It is clear that these were not old men, but rather the wise scholars representing these two schools. Thus, these scholars are called old and wise, even though they may have been very young. Halakha, Jewish law, seems to reflect this idea as well, as both Jewish laws requiring the Jew to stand up for the elderly and to stand up for scholars are placed together in the very same paragraph. Apparently, they have the same thing in common, which demands respect, wisdom. Is there any concept of retirement in Judaism? Whether the age is 65 or 70, there is a concept in almost every society today that at a certain age, one retires from employment. Some professions in the United States, like police, fire, teachers, allow retirement after 20 or 25 years of service when most people are still young enough to begin entire new careers, especially with the average age of people exceeding 80 years in many countries. How does Judaism view retirement? From a religious perspective, just as there are no vacations from Judaism, a Jew is obligated to practice the commandments and act Jewishly 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, so too there is no Jewish concept of retirement from Judaism. There is a concept of stopping physical labor on Shabbat, of course, and during the sabbatical year in an agrarian society where every 7 years there was Shemitah they did not plant in order to learn Torah. But no time off from being a Jew. Specifically, the Torah scholars got no rest, not only in this world, but even in the world to come, according to the Talmud. The classic story about a Jew who wished to retire was Jacob in the Bible. After experiencing all the turmoil of fighting with his brother, then running away from home, working for 20 years and having a family, then running away again, this time from his uncle Laban, the Torah says that Jacob dwelled in the land of his forefathers. On this verse, Rashi comments on the word dwelled, that Jacob wished to rest peacefully for the remainder of his life, i.e. to retire. God said that this is not the lot of the righteous, and subsequently, many crucial events and turmoil in Jacob's life then took place, including the entire episode of the enmity between Joseph and his other children, hatred which caused great anguish for 22 years until the family was finally reunited after relocating in Egypt. It seems that the Torah does not want Jacob or any other Jew to simply retire, whether it be from Judaism, from work, or life itself. As medical science continues to advance and people are staying healthier for longer periods, most individuals are blessed with a much longer lifespan. Because the human body can be kept healthier with fewer diseases in this generation, the illnesses of the mind are developing with greater frequency than in previous generations. Mental disease of advanced age, such as Alzheimer's, dementia, or what used to be called under the general term of senility, are exhibited with greater and greater regularity. Hopefully a cure will soon be developed, as breakthroughs have already taken place in arresting the advancement of some of these medical disorders. Nevertheless, the social problems related to these diseases do exist now, and they must be faced by relatives in particular and society in general. In regard to individuals who have contracted Alzheimer's or any other disease which attacks the mental faculties and impairs normal functioning in society, there are numerous moral dilemmas that need to be faced. The most important decision is often confronted by relatives, usually children, whether to have the elderly patient live at the home of the relative, or rather to put that person in a nursing home or other facility, especially if that patient objects. On the one hand, a home environment is usually warmer and more personable. But on the other hand, a facility usually has trained professionals and is more suited to take care of the difficult problems encountered as a result of the disease. Also, is it fair to ask a relative of this person who can no longer function the way he or she used to spend great amounts of time giving arduous care or not? Another dilemma concerns the burden of the cost. If insurance money does not cover the entire expense of care, how much of the patient's savings should be used up to pay for the care? And if the patient's savings are currently gone, how much should the children or other relatives have to contribute? Is it their responsibility to pay for even part of the cost if they have the means? And if they do not have the means, should they borrow the funds or take a second mortgage on their homes? Then there is the dilemma in the manner in which to behave on a day-to-day basis with parents who have dementia. If a parent with Alzheimer's makes a very difficult request of the adult child, must that child honor the request and do whatever the parent asks, bowing to the overarching obligation to honor one's mother and father? Or is there a point at which the child may legitimately refuse a parent? Finally, when senility reaches advanced stages and the parent is reduced to childlike functioning, how should a relative relate to such an individual? What degree of respect is required then when there is no longer any real cognitive relationship, when the patient cannot even recognize his or her relative or child? Judaism, through the sources, gives us direction in helping to come to grips with these difficult issues and discusses in detail many of them. The mitzvah to honor one's parents indeed has no age limits. It is a lifelong endeavor and one of the most difficult commandments, mitzvot, in the Torah. Part of this general mitzvah is maintaining the dignity all through life of a parent by feeding and clothing him or her and bringing the parent in and out of the house, says the Talmud. While the specifics of this mitzvah are usually inapplicable to parents during their childhood, they clearly apply to a parent who is senile or is very old, or has difficulty eating and drinking by himself or herself, difficulty dressing, or entering and exiting the home. A child of a parent who has dementia very often has to perform these specific tasks in order to allow that parent to live in that child's home. It is then, at these exceptionally difficult times, where a person honors his or her parent most, in the Jewish sense, by maintaining the parent's dignity in all these activities. But must a child indeed continue to act respectfully, even when a parent is clearly senile, even when the parent no longer recognizes the child? The Talmud records a story where Rabbi Tarfon's mother takes his wallet and throws it into the ocean, thereby destroying its valuable contents. This is certainly an act of an irrational person, possibly one who has dementia, since Rabbi Tarfon clearly did nothing to precipitate this action. Nevertheless, Rabbi Tarfon did not react negatively to his mother and accepted the action without a comment, especially since it was in front of other people. This teaches us that a child must continue to give respect to a parent even when that child is being hurt, in this case financially, and the action of the parent is totally irrational. This is not a mere Talmudic story to teach a moral lesson, but it is also codified by both Maimonides and Shulchan Aruch. Does respect for an elderly person in Judaism also include a person who has dementia who is not a relative? As discussed above, Judaism certainly believes in respecting anyone who is old, even a person who is not learned. But the reason given for this respect, as noted above, is that the elderly person, no matter how uneducated, has attained wisdom of life through experience. By logical implication, then, once this wisdom, even street wisdom, has left that person, the individual is no longer worthy of that respect. While it is true that a parent may be due respect forever out of a sense of gratitude for giving the child life itself, it might be logically deduced that from a Jewish perspective, society in general and individuals should not be required to honor and respect people with dementia. After all, what makes a human being unique in the world and connects each person to the divine is that individual's mind. If the mind is not functioning, it may be reasonable to assume that the person's uniqueness and divine spark is gone and no longer worthy of respect. However, as logical as this deduction may be, it is not the Jewish view towards individuals with dementia. Judaism does demand that society and all individuals still give respect to senile people, as recorded in the Talmud. Why is this so, and how is the logic not to respect individuals with dementia faulty? The same Talmudic passage explains the reason, implying that we respect someone for what he or she once had, and not for what he or she is today. The Talmudic imagery given is that of the first tablets of the Ten Commandments that were shattered by Moses, when he witnessed the people worshiping the golden calf. Later, God asks Moses to write a second set of tablets for the people, which were stored in the Holy Ark. What happened to those broken fragments from the first tablets after they were shattered? Were they simply discarded and thrown away? No. The Talmud says they were also stored in the Holy Ark as well, along with the second set of tablets. But why were these bits of broken stone placed inside the Holy Ark? They certainly were no longer functioning and were of no use to anyone. We learn from this an important Jewish concept. Even something which no longer has any function today, but as long as it once did have use and was once worthy of respect, it still must be respected now and is considered special even today. Thus, the original fragments of the tablets were saved and were stored in the Holy Ark because of what they once were, although briefly, and not because of their present value to Jews. For the same reason, an individual who is senile with dementia must still be respected. While that individual may no longer function in society and be the object of respect for current wisdom, the person must still be respected for the wisdom that she or he had in the past. In a similar manner, a Torah scroll that was once usable and holy must now be treated with respect, even if it is now invalid, torn, and cannot be used for a Torah reading. It must be given the same respect a human body is accorded upon death, when it loses its soul and its brain. The invalid Torah scroll is not thrown away, but instead must be buried in the ground next to a scholar. Thus, Judaism treats anything which once had Jewish value and holiness with respect, even though its condition has now deteriorated. A second source confirms that we must respect individuals with dementia, but uses a different imagery. The Jerusalem Talmud records that a wise person or an old person who forgot his Torah learning must be treated with the same reverence as a holy ark that is now empty, devoid of the Torah. While it is true that such an ark is not as holy without the Torah in it as it is with the Torah inside, it still must be respected as holy, called Tashmishei Kedusha, vessels which once held holy ritual objects, because they may not be discarded once the holy object they held has been removed. Thus, tefillin bags, phylacteries, Torah mantles, and other similar objects deserve some measure of respect, even if empty and no longer used. In a similar manner, an individual whose Torah has been removed and no longer contains the holy object, their mind which linked them to the divine, must still remain the object of respect in Judaism. Since parental respect is so important, are there any limits with regard to the irrational demands by parents who have dementia? The Talmud tells us of Rav Asi's mother, who was clearly elderly and had dementia. First, she asks her son for jewelry, and he dutifully obeys and brings her jewelry. Then she asks him to find her a husband, which he tries to do. when she insists that he find her a husband as young and as handsome as her son Rav Asi, he, Rav Asi, says the Talmud, leaves the house and heads for Israel to live there. He soon returned upon hearing that she died. We can learn a number of things from this story. Rav Asi tried to fulfill his mother's request, however absurd, until there came a point where the mother's demands were so irrational that he did not even try to fulfill them, i.e. to find a young husband as handsome as he. We may learn from here that a child need not obey each and every irrational parental request, but one must try wherever feasible. The specifics of when and where a child should adhere to a parent with dementia's demands needs to be analyzed on a case-by-case basis. But is it ever allowed in Judaism for someone else to take care of a parent? We can also learn from Rabbi Asi's actions that when he abandoned his mother at a certain point, it is teaching us something. Since the Talmud does not excoriate his behavior, apparently this was permitted, considering the circumstances. And we can assume that Rabbi Asi arranged for others to take care of her daily needs prior to leaving. Thus, we see that at some point it is permitted in Judaism to part from a parent with dementia. What is that point? Maimonides writes that when a parent has dementia, a child should try to take care of that parent as much as possible and have mercy on the parent. However, if he or she cannot take care of the parent because the parent is so irrational, then the child is permitted to arrange for others to take care of the person. What are the conditions under which the child can no longer take care of the parent? It might be the physical exhaustion of the child by trying to meet the parent's daily need. It might be the mental exhaustion after caring for the parent for an extended period of time with no respite. It might be the mental strain on the child, seeing a parent, once the strong-willed force in the house, reduced to a childlike behavior. Or it might be the guilt felt by the child for spending so much time with the parent while ignoring one's spouse or neglecting the needs of one's own children. It often is a combination of all of these factors. Each person must be totally honest with himself or herself, and also with the family, in arriving at the point when it becomes too much. This Jewish law should not be used merely as an excuse to remove a nuisance, but once the point is reached, according to Maimonides, one may indeed place a parent in a competent home or in someone else's care. It should be noted that the Ra'avad commentary totally disagrees with this ruling of Maimonides and says that it is wrong under any circumstances to let others take care of a parent and to say, I cannot take it anymore. A child may never leave a parent to be taken care of by others, no matter how difficult it gets, according to Ra'avad. But this apparently is only a minority opinion in Jewish law. Who must pay for the care of the elderly parent? This is a very complicated and technical topic, way beyond the limits of this podcast. Perhaps it will be discussed in a future podcast. Thank you all for listening and giving of your time. If you would like to respond or react to any of the points discussed, feel free to write in the group Facebook page, What Does Judaism Say About?, or more privately by email at whatdoesjudaismsayabout@gmail.com. That's one word, whatdoesjudaismsayabout@gmail.com. In addition, if you would like to receive a full transcript of this podcast, feel free to email me. Please subscribe to this weekly podcast so that you will not miss even one topic. Shalom.